From the time I can remember, I was into sports, all types. I played tennis, badminton, cricket, basketball, soccer. I used to play 5 to 7 hours a day. I was seriously considering a career in sports. I immediately got into my college badminton team. That was my sport. And I played all 4 years for my college team in badminton. I truly believe this, that every sports person is an entrepreneur. A lot has to be figured out by each player. Whichever game you play, you've got to figure out your athleticism, your game skills, your match skills. If you don't know an academic subject, you could perhaps study it hard for a week and still do well in your exams. But you couldn't play tennis hard for a week and suddenly show up and win a tournament. That's not going to work. It needs consistent practice, commitment. The disappointments you have in sports are pretty brutal. You know, you'll lose at times when you don't want to lose. You're like, how do I lose to this guy? You know, the highs are very high. You sometimes beat a champion and you're like, wow, I can do this too. And I do think that shaped my competitive spirit, my persistence, my strong desire to improve myself and take feedback. It wasn't all smooth. I'm actually very satisfied with what has happened.
He excelled at one of the fastest games in the world. But it took years of patience and persistence to build his multi-million dollar business.
Entrepreneurship wasn't really in my thought process in college at all. Most of us were there to study, do well, and get a job after college.
From the Chase Studio at the Nashville Entrepreneur Center, this is Circle Back, where we trace the life cycle of new business from bright idea to big payoff. I'm your host, Clark Buckner.
Yeah, firstly, thanks for having me here.
Today's guest, Saurabh Sinha, founder and chairman of the technology company Emids.
I grew up in a big city in India, Mumbai, which used to be Bombay. I grew up there. My father worked at a petroleum refinery as an engineer. And that was a public sector in India those days, still is. And my mother, since my sister and I are twins, she had a lot in her hands and she sacrificed a lot of her career ambitions just to be home and make sure that we are raised well. I was seriously considering a career in sports. I used to play 5 to 7 hours a day and loved doing it. Now, in hindsight, fortunately, I had a couple of injuries in my early teens that dampened my progress in sport. Those were very frustrating times. I would have to skip playing for several weeks at a stretch. During those downtimes, and I especially remember one where I couldn't even attend school for a month, I picked up some interest in school academics, much to the delight of my parents, who, you know, like every good parent, reminded me that I had a first duty to do well at school and then sports. I remember being very drawn to math. I loved solving math problems. I made a couple of new friends in school who were good at math, and I got into it even deeper and deeper. Math led me to like physics, which then I started liking some other subjects as well. And by the time I finished high school, I was securing pretty high ranks in the state. I wanted to do engineering. By the way, in high school, I picked up an elective in electronics and loved electronics. And electronics was a branch in engineering that you could do. So I was not only looking to go to a premier institute, but I was also wanting to do electronics as my stream of engineering. Thankfully, you know, I did well in high school, and I was able to get into a very good college with electronics and communication as my main stream. In college, this was also the time when the internet was making its way into India. So we were able to actually have an email address. We were able to browse the internet. Now, it was quite hard to browse. These were text-based browsers, like Lynx and other stuff, long back, okay? And so I remember spending a good amount of time in our computer center. And again, just to remind, this is a time when there were no laptops in the dorms or in my rooms. Like, so you had books, you studied with books, you wrote with a pen or a pencil. And I remember having a wow factor about that internet access. Like, oh, this could be big because I can get so many answers to questions much faster than going to the library and opening an encyclopedia and then trying to get to the page that you really need to get to, which is what, you know, those days, that was the way to go and get an answer for yourself, right? What internet did for me, though, was made me even more confident that I could handle vast amounts of information and assimilate it really well.
He was at a top school in a tough program, but he would find his tribe, a group of kindred spirits, dare we say, engineering nerds, whose idea of fun was building radar.
I think there were four of us, all from the same engineering stream. We decided to build our own radar. And we had learned how the radar works, and we said, let's go build a radar and see if it can receive signals, right? You know, we took whatever we could get, we beat it up, made it into that circular shape and, you know, the curvature, et cetera, which matters a lot in how it processes the signals. And we made it work. And really, I think it gave me confidence that I could do things that were beyond the curriculum and do them well.
Not many people in India were into startups at the time. But toward the end of college, a few guys were tossing the idea around.
It was interesting for me, but at the end of the third year, a global consulting firm hired me, and I was supposed to join them after I finished my 4 years of coursework. I was so excited about the job. It was a thing of pride for myself, for my parents. So I said, hey, listen, I'm going to go join the job, and then I will reconsider this maybe a year or two later. When I joined my job, the company made a smart decision to put me on a telecom project. And they had a project with a very successful company called Nokia, a Finnish company that was doing very well. And Nokia had these private branch exchanges. These are PBXs, are switches which sit inside an office and they become your phone system. My employer was contracted to go build a graphical user interface. So I was put in that team. It was a 13-member team. I was one of the four rookies in the team. So I show up, and my manager hands me this really fat 500-page manual and says, your job is to go to the switch, which is sitting in that very cold room, and in that 6x6 console it has, key in these commands in this manual and make sure the switch works. And my excitement about joining that project was, it was a graphical user interface programming, which was third generation kind of language, and I thought, I'm going to learn programming. So very frustrated with what I was given, but I followed the instruction. I would spend all day in a very cold room keying in and doing switch verification. And every now and then I would go and tell my manager how menial this job was and that it wasn't the right thing for me to do. I was capable of more and so on, right? And he would listen to me very patiently and then say, Saurabh, go through this, trust me, You'll be the most important resource on this project team when you're done with this. And sure enough, when the programming reached some critical stages, they needed to go integrate with the switch now. And I was the guy. I knew everything there was to know about the switch. And so I programmed large parts of that interface because I knew the switch. I also shared a lot of my knowledge with other people who were programming, so I became a very central resource, and I saw what he was saying in the beginning. And that project was a big success. But it taught me a couple important lessons. One, no work is menial. You know, if you have an open mind and patience, you'll eventually see the value it creates. And second, it's very important to understand the core of what is being done, right? At the end of the day, because I knew the switch, which is what the project was about, I became a critical knowledge person for that project. So that was a big event. And now that, because of the work I did there, they tapped me to work with a Silicon Valley company. That's how I came to the US.
Coming up, those old college friends come knocking again.
Hey, look, we're ready to start. Do you want to join?
I'm Sam Davidson, CEO of the Nashville Entrepreneur Center. For over 13 years, we've been working hard at the EC to make Nashville the most entrepreneurial city in America. We do that by serving entrepreneurs no matter where they are in their journey, whether they're just starting out, they're looking to scale and accelerate, or they've exited and looking to give back to the community. We have a place for you, whether it's in our award-winning accelerator programs, our co-working space, or in our mentor and advisor network. We have the resources designed to grow this community so you can grow your business. Learn more at ec.co.
So Saurabh made the move to Silicon Valley. He might have switched continents, but he found himself messing with the same old switches.
And I worked with Northern Telecom, Nortel, in their R&D division. And they had a very similar work where they were trying to build modern UI for really old switches. And I did that. And while I was in the Silicon Valley, while I enjoyed my time, the work wasn't as exciting. Maybe because it was a repeat of what I had done, it was a little underwhelming. And these friends of mine reconnected with me and said, hey, look, we're ready to start. Do you want to join? And that was the first time I just felt that I was ready. It was a big decision. It needed me to quit a Silicon Valley job and join a startup where we had no funding at that point. We had some savings. We were going to put it ourselves and start. I remember calling my dad. And he heard me, and he just said, go do it. So that's how, at the age of 23, I started my entrepreneurial journey with EMIDS.
That's E-M-I-D-S. An interesting play on the place where these partners first met.
These friends of mine and I lived in the middle level of the E dormitory. And we used to call all the people who lived in the middle level of E dormitory EMIDS. E-MIDS. My parents supporting me was very important for me. My dad said, look, once you go down the path in life and you're married and you have kids, it gets harder because of some commitments, which of course, you know, as a 23-year-old, I can't imagine, but He had been through the process. So he said that's why he encouraged me to start early. I also remember thinking to myself, well, if none of this works out, I'm still a good programmer. I can always get a programming job. Yeah, that was sort of my backup plan. This is late 90s. Everybody was either joining a startup or starting a startup. And that environment gave me the confidence and the excitement that this is possible. I think it mattered a lot that when I made this decision, I was actually in the Silicon Valley. It didn't feel impossible for me. I felt confident that I could go through that process. Whether I would be successful or not, who knows, but I felt the process was comfortable for me.
They weren't wedded to an idea per se, just to do something on their own. The first generation of eMIDS would be a .com.
We knew we could program very well, so we could easily build one. But we also decided to be in the business of .com. So we built our .com. Between the five of us and then a few employees that we hired, we did all the work. We did the development, the design, the launch, the marketing, the operations. And it was an exhilarating experience to see the .com get launched, marketed. It was great to see the first set of users. We went to raise funds. We realized that this business needs a good amount of funding. And after a lot of effort, we failed to raise money. All five of us are from very modest economic backgrounds, and we said we've already overcommitted ourselves, we can't do this. And it was a very difficult decision, but we then eventually closed down the .com business. But we were still very committed to the idea of being on our own. We said, well, look, we're good at building software. There are a lot of other .coms that need the software built, and they have the funding. Why don't we go show them the one we built, and maybe they'll like it, and they'll give us the project of going building there. And so that's how the second generation started, which is we moved to being a web design and development services company. And that started really well. We had very happy clients. The .com bust and the aftermath of 9/11 really broke our demand. It fell to very low levels. And after a few months of struggling, we came to the conclusion that the business was not at a place where it could support five founders. So four of them left. I stayed back, primarily because I had all the client relationships and interfaces. And I had more optimism about what I could do with the business, but also I had my doubts. It was a very difficult time after 9/11. And we sort of made by. Every month we had a sort of a near-death situation, right? I remember this one time, it was the 26th of the month, and we had to make payroll on 30th. And I looked at what we had, and I knew we didn't have enough to make payroll. So on the evening of 26th, I said to myself, I got to let the employees know so that they can make alternate arrangements. We were a small shop then, maybe about 30, 40 employees. So I wrote an email. I was very tired that evening, and I put it in the draft thinking, you know what, I'll reread it in the morning next day and send it. And I knew that once I sent it, I would, you know, make phone calls and meet some employees. As I was walking out of the office on the 26th, a client called me from New York to check on the status of the project. The project was going well. This client had already paid the project deposit. So I gave him the update. And then as I finished the update, I said, hey, look, I'm running into a cash flow issue. Is there any way you can wire me the remaining project funds? And he said, but Saurabh, the work's not done. I said, I know it's not done. I give you my word, it'll be done, but if you could, it'll be great. He said he'll think about it. I got to work next day morning, and as I was reading this email that I had to send, an email popped up from the client saying he had wired the money.
You can call it luck or divine intervention, but it saved them for the moment.
We got work and then we didn't have work. We got work and then we didn't have work. That kept going on and on. We're working hard. We're doing some cool projects, but we aren't growing. I did not want to be in a lifestyle business. I really wanted growth. In one other arrangement I had with the partners that left, which was important, we agreed that if the company survived and it met certain growth milestones, I would be able to get additional equity in the company. And they would transfer some of theirs to me.
Finding that path to growth, turns out, would involve advice from his father.
He also was in the tech space, so he understood what we were doing. He would frequently tell me that he thought we weren't differentiated enough. He also put me to many folks who could be advisors to me, and I would go talk to them about the business, and I would get the same feedback that not differentiated enough. If you can learn a lot more about the industry, you're going to be more useful to the client. So I started saying to myself, the differentiation we can create is go deep in one industry, still be great at programming, but go deep in an industry and then program and build technology solutions for that industry. Now, when I'm thinking this way, I'm in Nashville, so healthcare is not far away, right? So as I got this feedback, one of the first things I did, in fact, I remember was I realized Silicon Valley was the wrong place for the business. It was becoming more and more expensive. I think it's really meant for a higher tech kind of business. And I was visiting Nashville actually for a potential client. There was a client in Brentwood who wanted to build an intranet. I'd come to see that prospect. This was the first city where my prospect came to the airport to receive me. Never happened. I had traveled to New York, Long Island, Boston, St. Louis, Atlanta. Never happened. My second visit again picked me up. And then as I went around, you know, whether I was eating in a restaurant or just sort of walking around, it was very charming. It was beautiful. I love the hilly topology also. So I was quite smitten by Nashville. And as I was thinking about we need a new home for the business, Nashville was top of my list. I remember just as I was meeting folks here, met a few technology leaders from healthcare companies and saw how behind technology was in healthcare. So did a bit of empirical research on competition, on the industry. And then this years of telling myself that we need an industry of specialization, took the decision that this was the industry we're going to focus on. And really turned on the switch, and I announced to the whole company that we are going to build software, but only and only for healthcare clients. And the real immediate task is to learn healthcare, because none of us knew healthcare. And I tell you, luck does favor the persistent. A year after we chose healthcare, the Affordable Care Act was passed. And the Affordable Care Act gave significant incentives and motivations for businesses to invest in technology. So these companies that wanted to invest in technology had the capital, but no skill set, no capacity. And here we were in front of them with a focus on healthcare. By then, we had learned a lot in healthcare. It was not easy, but we learned quickly. We hired people from healthcare. I personally went through a Harvard School of Public Healthcare Technology Leadership Program to learn the ropes quickly. So as this time emerged and customers needed significant technology development, we were there in front of them. And our demand surged. And this is what I call the third generation of EMIDS, okay? Just that focus on healthcare. And that's the one that's still ongoing. Just to give you a sense of what focus can do to a company, the right focus, in the 13 years of the third generation, we grew 40% CAGR. We went from hardly $1.5 million in revenue to, by the time I left the role of a CEO very early in the year, $225 million revenues. We have several thousand employees all over the world. And that's the magic of bringing the right focus at the right time for a business. As we built software for our clients, the users were generally clinicians, caregivers, nurses. Each of them had such a noble mission of taking care of the patient. That actually motivated and inspired us at a different level. We were actually able to hire a lot more talent because of that. Because, you know, what we would tell software engineers is, what does your code do? Does it help a bank make another 0.1% margin, or are you able to help a patient? Which one do you want to choose? And then the answer was pretty clear, right? No, we want to be where our code can make a difference. So healthcare actually, even today, it allows us to be that differentiation on the employment side as well, on the talent side as well. And a lot of folks want to make a difference, and they join us.
It had been 5 years from nearly missing payroll to going all in on healthcare. Saurabh welcomed back one of their old partners and hired a good salesperson.
And between the three of us, not always in sync, but between the three of us, we laid the platform for growth of the company. I think every entrepreneur realizes you can never do it alone, and you should never do it alone. It wasn't all smooth. I remember we were working on this significant project for a healthcare corrections company. It was a multi-million dollar project, and we were deep in the middle of the project. They pulled it. At that time, this was about 40% of our revenues. I was frantic. I went to meet the CEO, and he assured me it was nothing to do with EMIDS or its services. He said, look, what happened is we lost two contracts, and we need to cut spend. Very painful for all of us, but a big lesson in it, which is you have to track your customer's business.
And don't wait for the customer to ask for a service. Tell them what they need.
You know my business well enough. You know my company well enough where you come to me with proposals as to what you can do for me, not the other way around. You have to be looking out beyond what your eyes show you. You have to learn to put those sensors out there that allow you to look far away. So we've over these 13 years made sure that every few years diversified both the capability and the market base so that we are building a long-term stable business. There are 45 Fortune 500 life sciences and healthcare companies. 25 of them are our clients.
When he was 23, his dad had told him, go for it.
It's never too late, but once you go down the path in life and you're married and you have kids, it gets harder because of some commitments.
Well, the commitments and the time arrived. Saurabh made the decision to hire a CEO and become chairman.
And so I had a great summer with my children. We traveled a lot. I had no emails to answer. That felt great. And so I think because the roots of my decision are based on how I want to live my life, I'm actually very satisfied with what has happened.
You've been listening to Circle Back. To subscribe, visit ec.co/circleback and follow, rate, and review the show anywhere you get your podcasts. Circle Back is made possible by the generous support of the Beth and Randy Chase family. Also, thank you to our media partner, Nashville Post. Keep your pulse on all things Nashville business and more by subscribing to their newsletter at nashvillepost.com. A big thanks to our team on producing this episode, with script writing by Demetria Kaladimos. I'm Clark Buckner, and we'll see you soon on another episode of Circle Back.